This is Tridio Media, and I'm Father Roderick. It is a warm, sunny day in Amersfoort, the Netherlands, and I'm back behind the microphone with a new show that sounds kind of like the old one. From Star Wars to the sacraments, from technology to theology, this show features the cool and the classical, the past and the future, the trends and the tradition. I'm Father Roderick, podcasting since 2005. Welcome to my show. And this show is brought to you free of advertisements, thanks to my patrons. Help me to continue to bring you these shows by joining them over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And I want to welcome the new patrons for the month of May. And there are a whole bunch of new supporters. Ralph, Rena, Carol, Jamison, I hope I pronounced these names correctly, Melissa, James, Matthias, Jack, Elizabeth, Cad, this is a hard one, Kaladribeki, or Kaladri Becky, and Tom. So please don't blame me for mispronouncing your name. Some of them are probably screen names. But I thank you so much for your support, and I hope you enjoy the new format. And I'll talk a little bit about that in the news.
Do you know what's going on?
This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
So all this sounds extremely familiar to longtime listeners. And as you know, I've been trying to do a daily format for a while, actually since the split up between SQPN and Tridio. And I've experimented with various ways to do that, only to conclude after months of trial and error, mostly error, that it just didn't fit my style. These shorter shows and doing shows on a daily basis, it just created this pressure of trying to perform. And I felt like the whole charm of what I used to do in way back when, the charm of just having a chat about the stuff that I'm passionate about, the things that I like, kind of having this informal vibe, that I lost all that by trying to do this daily show. And so one of the things that I've learned in life is it's better to stop when things are not going the way you want it and start again and try or go back to something that did work rather than trying to continue at all costs and basically at the detriment of the quality of the show. So this is going to be, again, like in the olden days, a weekly show. It will have a lot of the familiar jingles and the topics that you know that I'm talking about. But the new thing is that this show is always aired live on Facebook from a very nice studio. And a lot of you are listening to this. But imagine seeing me sitting in front of this microphone. I'm using my Heil microphone, by the way. Finally was able with the new computer to install that. I'm using the mixer again, so the audio quality is hopefully a lot better than in the previous months. But imagine me sitting behind that Heil microphone, and behind me you see the sea. There's a beach, a golden beach, and then there's blue skies and this kind of greenish blue sea in the background. It's kind of, I chose to have a background because of the temperature here in the studio, and it's really, really hot. It's only May, but it's so hot in the Netherlands. But no air conditioning in Dutch houses. So imagine that. And then, of course, what I can do now that I have a video recording of each show is I can take out certain segments and post them, repost them on YouTube and on Facebook. So that will also enable other people that are not necessarily listeners to the podcast to enjoy the content and, who knows, also start subscribing to the podcast. So it's a step forward and it's a step backward. But I think this is the right thing to do. I already feel super comfortable behind my microphone. And that there is one of the other advantages of having a live stream on Facebook is that there is a comment section. And so all the old friends are back there and people can chat amongst each other and even kind of chat after the fact, because you don't always have to watch a live stream right there. And then you can also rewatch it later. And it's just creating a whole different vibe. So I'm super excited about it. And well, since we're also going a little bit back in time, you know that one of the ingredients of every show that I do is talking about movies and TV shows.
How do you not like movies?
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl and that kid sees dead people and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
So, of course, the biggest movie right now for me is Solo, A Star Wars Story. It premiered last week. I was at the Dutch premiere, and you may have seen the video that I did, and the video review, the spoiler-free video review, for which I could use my brother, who was also there, and the two of us have been talking Star Wars since the day Star Wars came into our lives, and so it has been part of our lives for many, many years. And it was so much fun to kind of give our spontaneous on-air live reaction to what we had just seen. And most of the people that I know that have seen Solo love the movie. Some even love it more than Rogue One. A lot of people like it a lot better than The Last Jedi. And even though this is a very appreciated movie by the people that have seen it, it's still disappointed at the box office. And there may be various reasons for that. I know that in my country, the summertime is a bad time to launch movies. I know this is something that's very common in North America to go see movies during the summer holidays. Here in the Netherlands, a lot of the movie theaters didn't have air conditioning until very recently. And so the summertime, people want to be outside. We have lousy winters and lousy spring seasons and always rain. And so people love to go to the movies when the weather is bad. But when the sun is shining, people want to be outside. That's the last place they want to be is in the movies. So that may be a factor here in Europe. I think another factor is that this is a prequel. This is another story of a character, about a character, and two characters, or three, Chewie, Lando, and Han. And we know where they will end up. We know that they're going to be fine. And so that takes away a little bit of the tension of, and also the mystery of what's going to happen. We know that. So this is, a movie that really appeals to the old-timers among the Star Wars fans, the people that loved the original trilogy. And it's a lot of fun to discover how things came about and to actually see the things that Han later on will only talk about. But I think for the usual, kind of the common moviegoer, may not be as exciting as a whole new movie where you don't know where the story is gonna take you. So that's probably it. And I think, you know, actually, the box office numbers, that's only one thing. It could very well be that Star Wars, this Star Wars movie has legs, so that's how they say it, I think, so that it will actually pick up over time. A movie that is a good example of that is The Greatest Show, or The Greatest Showman, this amazing musical, which really opened with very low numbers, and then over time, week after week, the audience started growing. There was word of mouth publicity, and more people started to see it. I also know that quite a few people, but of course, I know a lot of hardcore Star Wars fans, but a lot of the fans that I know went back and saw it a second time and some even a third time because it's a dense movie. There's a lot in this movie to discover, and there's a lot to take in. And I remember the first time I saw the movie, I was like, I definitely have to see it again. And I made the mistake of rewatching the movie the day after it came out, so the day after the premiere. But I was still super tired from the premiere. I was in bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, so I fell asleep during the first part of the movie, and it was not because of the quality of the movie. It's just because I was too tired. But I will definitely see it a third time, and perhaps even more. I really, really like the movie. One thing that I only touched upon very briefly in my initial review is the soundtrack. You can find it on Spotify, or I'm using Google Play Music right nowadays. The soundtrack is amazing. It is one of the best Star Wars soundtracks in a long time. And even though it refers back to a lot of the classic John Williams scores, it brings it to a new level. There are different types of music, stuff that we've never heard in Star Wars movies. And I really hope that we will get to hear more of this composer in future Star Wars movies, because we all know that, you know, the next Star Wars movie will be the last score that John Williams will compose. And I think they found a very good successor. Now, this is movies and TV shows. I also want to talk about a TV show. This is something that a lot of you may not have heard of, but it is a tip. If you have Netflix, go check out a Brazilian series called The 3%. It is a TV show. I think there are two seasons right now on Netflix that I discovered because I saw an article saying it was a list of the best TV series that you're not watching on Netflix. That always kind of tickles my interest. And so it's this a story about a society where everything is in disarray. Basically the society collapsed, but people are building a new idealized society on an island far away, and a few people are chosen and selected, go through the process. It's the 3% of the people that apply for that process that will eventually be admitted to this wonderful world on that island where everything supposedly is good and happy, and you know, but they want to make sure that only the best of the best go there, and the rest of the people are living in slums and live a terrible life. And so the whole, it sounds very familiar. There are a lot of these futuristic, you know, near future stories that are similar to this one. That reminded me a little bit of The Hunger Games or what is it, Divergent, and stories like that. But it is what I love about this series is it's very unpredictable. There are a lot of surprises, and you may be surprised to hear me say this, but it's a very low-budget television series, and I love it because of that. It's not completely stuffed with CGI. They're using real locations. I don't know where they filmed this, but it's clear that they've used office buildings and neighborhoods, I don't know which city, to evoke a world, and they have been extremely creative with the limited budget to still create a very believable world. And the series is also in Brazilian, but for people that are not used to subtitles, they're also providing a dubbed version in English. It's not very well dubbed, probably because the American market doesn't have much experience with dubbing. It's not a common thing, but it definitely helps. It's less distracting than reading subtitles if you're not used to that. And this story just kept me on the edge of my seat for the entire first season. The second season started strong, different. It's sometimes a bit difficult to watch because you care about the people, and then there are some twists and people change and you're, but I really am curious to see where this goes. And there are a lot of interesting themes in this story because like every good science fiction story, it shows us a mirror of where our society is heading. And so this television series poses a lot of questions about, you know, our society that tends to select who is worthy, you know, who can have a future, who can have a life. And so it's also a little bit of a warning tale against the what Pope Francis calls the throwaway society, where you only count when you're useful, when you are among the 3%, and all the rest of the people, well, too bad for you. And so I recognize a lot of the themes that are also at work in our own society, and that's a mark of good science fiction. I love the acting; it's really good. So go watch it. It's called The 3%, and I think it's probably available in most countries. From that, it's time to move from the TV screen to the screen of my little Kindle player, and I want to talk about books for a second.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
So I finally finished the trilogy His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman. It's a trilogy that I started reading way back when the first movie that was based on the first book came out. And a lot of people said, The movie is nothing like the books. You gotta read the books. Also, a lot of people were upset about the books. And, you don't read it. Don't recommend it. It's very anti-Christian. And I watched the movie and I kind of liked it. It wasn't perfect, but it was good. And I wanted to know the rest of the story. And there were a few small references to the church. And it takes place in this kind of like this alternate world where the church is ruled by basically by dictators and by evil people. But it was downplayed a lot in the movie. So I read the first book and I was like, okay, yeah, I can tell that they've changed stuff in the movie. And then I read the second book, which I also reviewed on my show. What was it called? The knife, the blah 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 knife. I even forgot about it. And it was okay. It was okay, but there were also some really slow moments in the subtle knife. It's such a weird title, the subtle knife. And even in The Subtle Knife, I was like, I don't really see the problem. How is this anti-Christian? Yeah, it's what some people perceive as the church and kind of leans heavily on certain stereotypes. But I didn't really feel that it was necessarily super anti-Christian. Well, all that changed when I read the third book. The third book... of course, I won't spoil anything, but in the third book, it gets to our world. And so then all of a sudden, we're not talking just about an alternate reality, but there are judgments given to our world, our reality. And it gets really obnoxious. There is a point in the book where one of the characters reveals her Catholic past and then tells the protagonists of the story why she stepped out of that oppressive life of the Catholic faith, etc., etc. But it's a totally gratuitous moment in the book, and it feels like it's been just written there to basically attack the Catholic Church. And it feels very contrived. It doesn't really add anything to the story. And then the alternative, and that's kind of more of a philosophical issue that I have with the book, the alternative that is given to faith and to the existence of God is a lousy alternative. It's all about, you know, well, if God is no longer there, if heaven is fake, then death, you know, death is dispersing your individuality in the whole. It's kind of the drop of water that falls into the ocean. How is that an improvement over the Catholic concept of heaven? It's basically, you lose everything. And then it just waxes poetic about that you can now be part of the flowers on the fields and the birds in the sky. The only thing that the book forgets is that there is no consciousness to actually enjoy that. So what good is it to be part of the whole if you are no longer there to actually be part of that whole? So it's really weird. I don't see the appeal. I really don't see the appeal of the alternative that Philip Pullman. I personally thought the third book was really badly written. There are some super boring, annoying passages where it just goes on and on and on about certain characters. And I've never been a fan of the witches, for instance, in the first book and in the movie. And that just gets amplified. And there are so many times in the book where it's like, come on, get on with it. I don't have all the time in the world. Life's too short for this book. And so there are some good points. I don't want to be completely negative. I loved kind of the ending of the main character, the girl in the book. And there's some touching moments that were very well written and very emotional moments in the book. But on the whole, I was very, very disappointed. And I read quite a few interviews and I watched a few interviews with the author, with Philip Pullman on YouTube, etc. And at one point, he is dishing Tolkien and C.S. Lewis. And he's like, ah, pff, those guys, they write with an agenda. Not unlike me. I write so neutrally. And I don't judge. I don't try to push my philosophy onto the reader. I just want the reader to have fun and to be in this world of imagination. And I was like, yeah, right. You are not Tolkien. You are not C.S. Lewis. Absolutely not. Oh, it's okay. I don't regret having read the books, but come on. Be a little bit more respectful of your fellow writers, man. So apparently there's a fourth book that he has written. It's about dust. Dust is one of the concepts that returns. I can't talk about it too much without spoiling it. Haven't read that book yet. It's an interesting concept, though. He didn't want to write a prequel. He didn't want to write a sequel. But he's written an equal. So the new book, or probably going to be another trilogy, I don't know. The new book is going to be about events parallel to the events in the existing trilogy. So I think that's an interesting concept. It will perhaps deepen our understanding of certain things that happen to the characters. And I think it's a very creative solution of continuing to write about a world that basically has had its conclusion in the existing books. So, yeah. His Dark Materials, it's not Tolkien. It's not on the same level. Absolutely not. It was okay. But I was also very annoyed by the kind of ham-fisted way in which he attacks what, again, it's what he perceives to be the Catholic Church. And there may have been times and situations where some of his criticism is extremely justified. But I would be the first one to agree with that. But what the mistake that he makes, I think, and, you know, he's not the only one who does that, is to generalize it as if everyone who is part of that Catholic Church is rotten to the core and is, you know, it should all be eradicated. It was like, come on, come on. It's not because I dislike one book that I'm going to say, all the writers of books, it's all rubbish. Who reads books? I've read that book and it was rubbish. So all books are nonsense and you should just read newspapers. Whatever. You get my point. So that was my experience of his Dark Materials. And of course, I know a lot of you have read books and there are some big fans in my audience as well. So perhaps I may be exaggerating. I'd love to hear what redeems these books in your view. So let me know in the comments.
Catholics rock!
They are planning on closing the cathedral of my diocese.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat, light bulbs?
The church where I have been ordained a priest, and not just me, but basically almost all the young priests in my diocese.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
The cathedral is in the city of Utrecht. It's not the original cathedral, which was a much bigger church, which was taken from the Catholics during the Protestant Reform. And part of that church has collapsed. The tower is still there, and part of the choir, what used to be the choir of the church, is still there. But it's no longer a Catholic church. The cathedral that we have used for many decades was a church that belonged to a convent. And it's a smaller, just doesn't have the allure of, let's say, the cathedral of Sertogenbosch or some of the other cities in my country. So it was a modest cathedral, but still a beautiful cathedral. The old part of it was from the Middle Ages, and then there's some neo-Gothic stuff that they added later and then removed partially. There's another big church in the center of Utrecht, which is a Baroque church. It's really not my taste. I always think of cake when I see churches like that, but it's okay. It's an okay church. And it's really in the center, in the heart of the city. And apparently, from what I've read, the Catholic faith is so much in decline in the heart of Utrecht that they are no longer able to finance both churches. It's too expensive. They are losing about 400,000 euros every year. They have big reserves, but they have decided to or they want to propose, because this is a long process, to close the current cathedral and move the cathedral, or to change the current church of St. Augustine, which is the Baroque church, and turn that one into the cathedral. It's kind of shocking because, well, that was where my life as a priest began and as a deacon as well. It's the church where I went to church every Sunday for 5 years that I was at the seminary in Utrecht. And I think for a lot of people that live in the city of Utrecht, it's even worse because, you know, they've been in that church for way longer than I was. So, on the basis of that, it's kind of a peculiar moment. I did not expect this to happen. But on the basis, I want to kind of tie a question to this. And that is, what is a cathedral? And what is the difference between a cathedral and a basilica? You may have heard of the basilica. That's also a big church in general. So what's the difference? And what's the difference between a cathedral, a basilica, and a church, a regular church? And what is a chapel? How is a chapel different from a church? Well, time to break that down. Well, the cathedral. Let's start with the cathedral. The word cathedral comes from the word cathedra. And cathedra in Greek means the seat. It is literally the seat of the bishop. There is a big chair in those churches, in those cathedrals, where the bishop sits during his masses. So basically, it symbolizes the main church of the bishop of that diocese. That is why you can change it. You can take the chair, literally, you can take the seat of the bishop, put it in another chair, and then put it in another church, and then that church will be the cathedra church, the cathedral church, the church of the cathedra of the bishop. So that's the cathedral. But what is a basilica? A basilica is a church of a certain value that stands out from all other churches. I think it's still in the Vatican that they decide which church can become a basilica. And so, for instance, in Rome, you have one cathedral and a couple of basilicas. Now, this is a trick question. What is the name of the Cathedral of Rome? Is it A, St. Peter's, or B, St. John of Lateran? Well, the answer is not A. It's not St. Peter's Basilica. The name says it, St. Peter's Basilica. St. Peter's is just a basilica. It happens to be in the Vatican where the Pope lives, but his chair as a Bishop of Rome has been for centuries in St. John of Lateran, which is the true cathedral of Rome, the mother of all churches. And so for a lot of people are confused by that. So why doesn't the Pope just put his seat in St. Peter's and make that the cathedral? Well, that all has to do with history. The St. Peter's Basilica is a much newer church than St. John of Lateran. And so if you go to St. John of Lateran, that's where you will see the actual cathedra, the actual seat of the Bishop of Rome, of the Pope. And whereas there is a wooden chair underneath the big stained glass window of the Holy Spirit in St. Peter's Basilica, a lot of people think, well, that's the seat of the bishop. Well, no, it's not. It's not. It's St. Peter's chair, perhaps. But it's not the cathedra of the Pope. So, basilica. Then you have church, regular church. A church can be any building where people worship, right? In the Catholic church, it has to be dedicated. So it has to be destined for worship. So it's not just like, oh, we'll just rent a place, a theater, and then that will be a church. what you see a lot in Protestant denominations, where basically any space can function as a church. In the Catholic tradition, there is a process to dedicate. It's like, and you can't just use a church for anything. It's you can't have multifunctional churches where, you know, on Sunday it's a church and then on Monday it's a Dolby Stereo IMAX theater. Even though a lot of churches actually would be really good, nice buildings for IMAX screens, but that's besides the point. But so, and you can't have a church where, you know, during the week you'll change it into, I don't know, a cafe or a bar or something, or have a party inside a church. Like, no. Even for concerts, there are very strict rules. You can have organized concerts in the church, but the concerts need to have a religious dimension. And preferably even there needs to be a moment of prayer during those concerts. So it's all because of the kind of the, it's like when I bless an object as a priest, the blessing dedicates that object to a certain purpose. And it means you can't desecrate it in a certain way by using it for totally non-religious purposes. So that is a church. And then what's a chapel? That's interesting. A chapel, there's not really a good definition for a chapel. In practice, a chapel is usually a space where people would come together for worship, linked to an institute like a monastery or a school or something like that, or a hospital. All those have chapels, so they're not. They are basically like churches, but they're linked to a specific community instead of or to a specific institute rather than being destined for a parish. Some chapels can be massive, can be much bigger than churches. So it's not the size. And where does the word chapel come from? That's a very interesting one. The first chapel was actually a building that was built to hold the relic of the mantle of Saint Martin of Tours. You know that famous story. And if you don't know it, there's a Lego video on our Tridio channel, Tridio Media, over at YouTube, where I tell the story of Saint Martin of Tours. It's a famous story where, you know, he was a Roman soldier and he sees this poor man shivering in the cold and he decides to cut his own mantle in half because he needs to have a mantle as a soldier. But he's like, okay, I'll just give half of my mantle to this poor man. And then later on, he has a dream where the poor man that he gave half of his mantle actually is Jesus himself, who appears to him in a dream. So the first chapel was built to shelter this important relic of Saint Martin of Tours. And the word capa in Latin means mantle. So that building was called chapel capa, and it became capella. And capella became chapelle in French, and chapelle became chapel in English, or capelle in Dutch. So that's where the word chapel comes from. And I think that's it for this little visit to the world of the Catholic faith. And, well, since we're still talking, let me go to the world of technology. Why not?
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you plugged in a new device. And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner build... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
All right, there's one more thing. There's always one more thing in the world of technology because they're constantly inventing newer things. One of those new things that I've tried out, and I've never had one of these before, is a smartwatch. Well, a lot of you have one of those Apple watches, but I've always kind of avoided them because they're super expensive, first of all. I didn't really like the looks of them. They're square, and I just didn't see the purpose for an e-watch. So never really bothered buying one. I don't want to spend $350 on a watch. But that changed when I was reading up on the change that Google was making from the Android watch operating system to what they call Wear OS. And I actually was doing an interview the other day, or a few weeks ago, for an upcoming documentary on Tridio about fairy tales, and I was interviewing a permanent deacon, and his wife actually had an Android watch, and it looked great because it was round. It was circular, and it looked like a real watch, but it was also this very cool sci-fi kind of device with a really nice faceplate and had all sorts of functions that I don't think the Apple Watch has. And so I inquired, I looked around, and I found a very cheap Chinese smartwatch called the Tick Watch, the Tick Watch E. And I think it was based on or was built after a crowdsourcing campaign. And so it was supposed to be a very cheap watch, and it's regularly on sale on Amazon. So I was just looking at, when is this going on sale? One of the reasons that I wanted to try out the Android watch, the Tick Watch, was that it had everything that my current – I didn't really have a smartwatch, but I had a watch that I use for running. It's a heartbeat meter. It's one of those TomTom watches, and I love it. But it's also very limited. It's really for sports and nothing else. So I wanted something a little bit more versatile. And I also knew that the Android watches were able to listen to my commands. So you can actually activate the Google Assistant by saying, well, OK, Google. And then it will switch on and it will connect to the internet. And so it was a step closer to this Star Trek world, where you can just say, computer, tea, Earl Grey hot. And I've always wanted that. I always want to just, wherever I am, and I do have, of course, the Google Assistant on my my phone, but then I have to, you know, switch on the phone, launch the app, and then press a button or say, okay, Google, and then only then it will listen and do something. Well, I want to be able to do that anywhere. And this watch, according to what I read, was able to do that. So I watched and I saw one day there was this sale on the watch, and it cost only, I think, about 100 euros. But I still had gift certificates for the UK Amazon store. And so ultimately, I ended up paying just 20 bucks. And it was sent to me like a few days later, and I still love it. Does it answer all my prayers? No, certainly not. Especially the connectivity is a problem because I don't have an Android phone. And so it connects to Apple, to the iPhone. But the iPhone, it doesn't really interface that well with the smartwatch. So I've heard that for people that have an Android phone, it's much more powerful. But it works okay. Another thing that doesn't always work and that has to do with the connectivity is the OK Google thing. So in order for that to work, it needs to have a live connection with Wi-Fi or with your phone. But the phone sometimes disconnects the Bluetooth connection. And the Wi-Fi, because this is still based on a very old I think it's called SoC. So it's basically the chip that powers these smartwatches. It's a very old one. It's from 2014 because Qualcomm, I think I explained this before, Qualcomm hasn't developed any new small size chips for smartwatches because, well, it didn't take off, the whole concept of Android smartwatches. Well, it turns out that Qualcomm is now working on a new version of their chip. They're working in conjunction with Google, and everybody expects Google, when they are presenting their new Pixel phones, to also introduce the first Google smartphone, a smartwatch. And then, of course, it will have much better technology. So the problem with this old chip is that it is consuming a lot of energy. So in order to save energy, it shuts down the Wi-Fi connection all the time. And when there's no Wi-Fi, you can yell at your watch, but it won't listen. So in theory, it works. It gives you kind of a taste of what a Wear OS-powered phone or watch can do in the near future, hopefully really near. But it's not there yet. However, it has a lot of redeeming qualities that I like, especially the fact that you can load your own smart your watch faces. It's much less restrictive compared to what Apple allows you to do. So basically, anyone can design new faces for the watch. And a lot of these have extra functionality, which I love. I think the classic one that I use on Sunday, and it looks like a classic watch. Also, in order to save energy, it only lights up when I move my wrist, and then it gets the full color classic watch face. And then when I turn my wrist away, it senses that, but it will still be always on, and it switches to a black and white version of the watch. So I can always see what time it is, and not just the time. I can also see the weather. Here I can see the percentage of the battery, the day of the week. There are other faces. So one that I use all the time has a step counter and an activity counter, and have a ring. So they're very similar to what Apple is doing as well. And I find that extremely motivating to see that, gosh, I've almost walked 10,000 steps today, and I still am tempted to. Well, I also like that it nudges me to go walk. I think the Apple Watch does that too. So many things that a lot of the Apple Watch owners will say, well, mine has that too. But one thing your Apple Watch doesn't have so far is a circular form. This is the final week of the month of May, so it will also be the final episode of my Star Wars documentary, Galaxy of Friends. If you haven't seen it yet, go to Tridio on YouTube, youtube.com/Tridio Media, and you can see the entire thing for yourself. Next week, have to lower the music a little bit. Next week, there's going to be a new month, a new theme. It's going to be the month of the Camino. And you will get the full version of my Camino documentary that I filmed while I was walking for 40 days from Lourdes in France to Santiago de Compostela, and even beyond that, to Finisterre and to Muxia. I've posted some small videos while I was walking the thing, but you've never seen the entire trip. So that's all coming to you and to my patrons over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick during the month of June. So stay tuned. And again, thank you so much if you are one of my supporters. If you pray for me, if you support me financially, it's thanks to you that I can do what I love doing most, and that is bring you these shows. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Take care, and God bless.